It's been said that the Velvet Underground didn't sell that many records, but everyone who bought one started a band. That's often the case with influential groups. Today, Ed Ward looks at the MC5, which wound up a legend because of their political stance and because of their influence on the punk rockers who came a decade after them.
Lama, lama, far, far, far. Starts out with Brother Wayne Kramer. Brother Wayne Kramer.
In the 60s, everyone knew there'd be a revolution. And everyone knew that one of the most integral parts of the revolution would be rock and roll. The only snag was, where would it come from? The Beatles and the Stones were wealthy men already. No matter how much they mouthed their support, they were suspect. Plus, they were British. What was needed was an American band to do the job. This was the weight the MC5 wound up carrying, and it was both their blessing and curse. They had the revolutionary credentials, they were working class, they had the support of their peers, and they were really good. The MC stood for Motor City, and nobody in Detroit argued they deserved it. They were loud, bratty, and looked like stars. They idolized James Brown and Sun Ra alongside Chuck Berry. And when John Sinclair, who became their first manager, saw them, he knew he'd found what he wanted. Sinclair had a plan to organize the white working class as efficiently as the Black Panthers did in their community. He was a jazz fan, a poet, and a charismatic guy, so his White Panthers had attracted a core of idealistic youth. The MC5 became their official band. Their shows at Detroit's Grandee Ballroom were legendary, thanks to the fervor of the White Panthers' Minister of Information, Jesse Crawford, who whipped the crowd up before the band played a single note.
Brothers and sisters, I want to see a sea of hands out there. Let me see a sea of hands. I want everybody to kick up some noise. I want to hear some revolution out there, brothers. I want to hear a little revolution. Brothers and sisters, the time has come for each and every one of you to decide whether you are going to be the problem or whether you are going to be the solution.
That's right.
You must choose, brothers. You must choose. It takes 5 seconds. 5 seconds of decision. 5 seconds to realize your purpose here on the planet. It takes 5 seconds to realize that it's time to move. It's time to get down with it. Brothers, it's time to testify, and I want to know, are you ready to testify? Are you ready?
Elektra Records signed the MC5 in a flash, recording them live at the Grandee over Halloween weekend, 1968. But they made a huge mistake. Introducing the second song, the album's title track, Kick Out the Jams, vocalist Rob Tyner had used an expletive never before heard on a record. The band has subsequently overdubbed the phrase Brothers and Sisters, but the record company went ahead with the uncensored version. Wholesalers in droves followed the lead of Detroit's biggest record chain and refused to stock the album. It charted well, but airplay was zilch, and Elektra dropped them. A fan came out of the woodwork, a rock critic named John Landau. He offered to produce their second album, and after they signed with Atlantic, he did. With John Sinclair jailed for marijuana possession, the band was on its own. It toned down the politics slightly and made Back in the USA a more radio-friendly album. Almost.
All right, kids. Let's get together and have a ball.
Sitting in the classroom, give your heart
Sandow's studio inexperience showed. The mix was terribly thin and diluted the power of what it sounded like, in John Sinclair's words, a guitar army. The album flopped. The band continued to tour, but they found it hard to get jobs outside of the Midwest. The hippies on the West Coast hated them, the East Coast didn't know what to make of them, and Britain was busy with its own acts. But Atlantic gave them a second chance, and a staff producer, and the resulting album, High Time, was a masterpiece. This time the album sold even worse. It was 1971. There would be no revolution. The band was racked with drug problems and internal squabbling, and finally in 1972 they called it quits, but not before they'd done a short European tour. It's significant that the last recorded document we have from the MC5 is a song about cars. Yes, there would be no revolution, but there would be young kids who'd listened to the MC5 and started their own bands. There would still be rock and roll.
Ed Ward is a writer living in Berlin.